Welcome to Gonkcast, an Autechr podcast. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this is yet another bonus episode about your emails. As always, we tried to work as many of your emails into our main episode as possible, but we got a few too many and a few unrelated to LP5 and EP7, so we're going to tackle those now. Plus, as a bonus within the bonus, we're going to spend some time on Autechr's second Peel session, recorded in 1999, but released at the very end of the year 2000. First, let me remind you that our next episode will be on Confield and Gantz graphs, so send us your emails, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Of course, you can also email us about a release we've already covered or one we're going to get to later, gonkcastpod@gmail.com, or tweet us at gonkcastpod. Contact info is always in the show notes. Lastly, I feel like we sometimes forget to say thank you to all the people who have written to us, tweeted us, commented on YouTube and Reddit, etc., etc. So thank you. It makes the show a lot more fun and a lot more insightful, for real. Okay, I want to shout out listener Chris, who emailed us very early on and urged us to talk about both Peel sessions. That being said, Dan, what do we need to know about Peel session 2?
Yeah, so Autechr recorded their second session for the legendary John Peel on July 5th, 1999, just 1 month after the release of EP7, if you're keeping track. However, it wasn't broadcast until September 8th, and it wasn't officially released until December 11th of the following year. Listener Darren wrote us to say, I remember listening to this when it was broadcast on Peel's show and recording it off the radio. The tracks had been sent to him minus any titles, so Peel made up temporary titles for fun, trying to come up with Autechr-like names. Gakwad was named after the Indian cricket player Anshuman Gakwad, who Peel liked. Autechr got in touch with Peel during the show to say that they wanted to keep his track names. I think they respected him so much, it felt like a cool thing to do.
That is cool. I find that very heartwarming for some reason. Anyway, in regard to reception, Peel Session 2 is not quite as well liked as number 1. It got 3 stars from AllMusic, a 6.9 from Pitchfork, and it's sitting at a 3.25 on Rate Your Music, making it one of their lowest rated non-collaborative releases, period. Very curious what Will have to say about that. So, Dan, how did it go with Peel Session 2? Was it relatively new to you?
I mean, you know, somewhat. I've listened to it before, but it's definitely not one of the records that I, you know, just throw on when I feel like listening to Autechr. I mean, pretty similar to, you know, Peel Session 1 in my previous familiarity. What about your previous familiarity?
Much less for me, honestly. You know, it's basically if I've heard this, it's because I threw on the EP's box set and, you know, there's something about that box set, obviously, where it gets like kind of crazier and less appropriate for background music as it goes on. So it's like probably around this time is where I stop, you know, stop listening if it was just something I had on while I was like reading or doing something around the house. So, you know, I don't know if I've ever really like listened from the start to the end of this EP and like really thought of it as its own release. But what did you think about it overall?
You know, it was sort of similar to the first release. It's not bad. I just, you know, it's nothing. There's a reason I didn't just throw this record on all the time. You know, it's a bit lackluster of a of an EP, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say that when it starts, I'm all in because I think Gelk is a monster of a track.
I agree with that.
It is just, it's almost like the missing link because it's got kind of a tri-rep-esque, like kind of straightforward beat and melodic loop that is like really hypnotic and engaging and pretty accessible, honestly. There's like a pretty deranged EP7 style percussion going on underneath. And then it makes this incredible shift that I might compare to LP5 or like, you know, Sepater off of Chiastic Slide. You know, it shifts from, I don't know, pretty like something I would call like kind of a simple, catchy gem of a track into like this menacing, dark hip hop, you know, beat. And that's when it just like takes off, I think, because there's this incredible sound that's something like a prepared piano or like pulling at, you know, piano strings or something like that. And I don't know, it's just like a brilliant atmosphere. I just love how it goes from like such a nice, lovely little gem, immediately engaging into like something quite menacing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one track I think is like really worth your time here on this EP. I really love it. I love how that opening section, it's sort of like a, it almost sounds like a steel drum. It's like a weird, you know, almost distorted like island jam.
Yeah,
at first. And then, you know, it takes that turn in the middle, and that turn is just like, it's such like a left turn, you know, like it's completely like different than that front. But I think they meld like together very well. And you're right. It like turns into this sort of like, it goes from this like kind of happy island sounding thing to like real menacing, you know, dark kind of thing. I really love that song. And in fact, I think that's, you know, why this EP deserves, you know, at least the 3 or whatever that it has on Rate Your Music, you know?
Yeah, but it's the kind of thing that I agree. It's almost misleading because I think when you throw this on, you're going to be like, damn, I forgot how good this is, you know? But I don't think that there's a ton, you know, else here that's worth listening to. I do like the Gaquad track, you know, a bit more than the other remaining 3 here. It actually has sort of an interesting, I don't know, slightly acoustic vibe. It reminds me of Map Hive off of EP7 a little bit, because there are those kind of like, there's something like acoustic sounding about the bells, you know, like as if they're real bells in a real room. And it actually complements Gelk in a nice way, because that like prepared piano sound sounds like, you know, a real physical object as well. And I don't know. It's also got a kind of a cool, I read somewhere that somebody compared it to footwork, like the closest Autechre ever got to footwork. And it does have that kind of like crazy bouncy dry beat to it.
Yeah, I can see that.
So I would say that that's cool. The other 2 tracks I think are not that great. I mean, this like bleep feel or however it's pronounced. It's kind of like one of those rave ups, like, you know, when like Aphex Twin wants to go into hardcore mode. And those are the worst Aphex Twin tracks, and it's also the worst track here. It's just like, it's just like pure aggression, but so straightforward that it falls a little flat, you know? We're preparing for our Confield and Gantz Graff episode, and it's like, you want to hear aggression, you know, listen to the Gantz Graff title track, you know?
That's exactly
feels like weak.
That's exactly what I thought. You know, it sounds like, you know, building up to something like Gantz Graff, but just like completely falling short of it. You know, you're right. You know, I don't want to get too much into Gantz Graff since we're going to talk about it, you know, on our next episode, but this song here, you know, it's just so like repetitive. I just feel like nothing really happens in the song, you know, especially coming off of like Gelk, where we talked about how there's such this big like change up in the middle. And I mean, I don't think like Gelk sounds like really any other kind of Autechre song really. But Blyfill, whatever, it's just kind of boring, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. And it's just such a shame, because I think if we went from Gelk to Gaquad and then to like Blyfill, you know, you might say, okay, it tapers off at the end, but what a strong start. But because it's like you disrupt this really interesting like mixture of acoustic and electronic thing that's going on, it could have been a theme of the EP, you know, but it's like it gets totally disrupted by this, I don't know, just kind of like weak rave up. And then 19 Headaches, I gotta say, you know, apologies to John Peel, but this is like the one poorly titled track here. The rest, great job, but this is kind of corny, I think.
It's funny you say, I don't know how true this is. I didn't look into it, but I was reading through a little bit of the Rate Your Music reviews, you know, that people type out, and someone claims that John Peel was like taking phone calls to come up with titles, and that Autechre themselves called in and jokingly called it 19 Headaches.
Interesting.
So that one might be real. I, you know, take it with a grain of salt. I just read it from some random guy on Rate Your Music. I didn't look into it at all, but that might be actually titled by them.
In that case, bad job, Autechre.
I completely agree.
Yeah, it just sounds like somebody trying to be, I don't know, silly. But actually, it'd be better if it was like 19 Headache. Then it would be like a little more.
That's a little more Autechre. Yeah.
But in any case, this is an interesting track that I still think is sort of a disaster, honestly. I don't know. People accuse Autechre and a lot of algorithmic or generative music or music with those qualities of sounding like Set It and Forget It, you know, sounding they might not even be in the room while this is going on. And, you know, I understand like the problems with that are that, yes, but the artist made all the choices and stuff like that. And so my point is that if Autechre ever does that, when they do that, it's still, you still feel so much of them in the track. This track, 19 Headaches, it really honestly sounds like just a bunch of random loops, like they're not in the room. And it might be because of the emptiness of the track, but also just because of like these little melodic synth lines. They're just like playing random scales and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Like, do you get what I'm saying? It really feels like the one time that the criticism is actually true.
Yeah, I agree. I this is my least favorite song on this EP. I think kind of by far. It's just kind of flat out boring, and not in a boring way like Bleefill, where it's just like, you know, kind of uninspired. It just like I had to like force myself to kind of pay attention to it. It's just like while it was going on, I just kept like forgetting that I'm listening to it. Like which is something that really never happens to me with Autech. You know, it's generally like so engaging, and yeah, it just feels like kind of phoned in. You know,
I don't know. It's interesting in its failure, I think, for some reason. But, you know, Darren, when he wrote to us, he highlighted Gelk and Bleefill, actually, as his favorites. You know, surprising to me. I guess we've spent enough time on it. But, I don't know, I feel like a bit of a rube, because on Rate Your Music, the highest rated are Gelk and Gaekwad. And those, to me, are like the two obvious standouts. But, I don't know, would you go so far as to say that the other two, Bleefill and 19 Headaches, are actively bad?
I think 19 Headaches is maybe actively bad. But Bleefill, I think, you know, if somebody else did it, I think it could be like a decent electronic song, you know, not great by any means. But I think it's disappointing when, like, you know, Autechre releases something that's just okay. You know what I mean? Like, because especially, you know, like I said, we're going to get basically the same kind of thing here in a couple months with Gantz Graf done so much better. And it really shows you that like this track falls short because you get it not falling short, you know, in a couple months or whatever. So I wouldn't say it's actively bad, but I would say, I think 19 Headaches isn't bad, in the sense that like, it's a horrible song to listen to. It's just bad in the sense that I think it's like completely uninspired and boring.
Yeah, I mean, I think 19 Headaches, I prefer that to Bleefill. I think it's like sort of interesting in its failure, like I said. But Bleefill, it just feels like something that others have done better.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're right. It's like by the time you get to Gantz Graf and stuff, they're adding tempo and stuff into the mix. This, you know, it's like as far as destroying tempo and messing with that and like using it to add to the overall aggression. This is just like, I don't know, 4-4 aggression, and it just like never really achieves liftoff. You know, the question is, when you listen to this, do you think, all right, it's kind of an uneven EP with some pretty high highs and some pretty low lows? Or do you feel more like this was never meant to be anything more than a radio broadcast, and it would be kind of fun to hear on the radio, you know, and that's all that they were trying to accomplish with this?
Yeah, I guess if you look at it that way, I mean, that is true, you know, like if I heard these just, you know, on the radio, they would be kind of fun. And I think, I mean, Bleefill might work better that way, you know, that aggression when you don't have to, like, if you're going to hear it just one time, you know, that aggression might be fun. And then, but it doesn't hold up, you know, looking at it under the microscope, you know, listening to it for over and over and over, you know. So I get that. But then, I mean, if that's truly your intention, then don't ever release it. You know, I mean, I get that. I know it was bootlegged and everything, and maybe it's a way to just combat that. But, you know, if you make it an album or an EP, whatever, like you've taken that away, no matter the reason.
I mean, yeah, it's interesting because obviously any of these releases are going to get like bootlegged like crazy, and Warp knows it's like easy money to release it. I mean, it's worth noting that when you get to EP7, the name EP7 means that Peel Session 1, they don't consider an EP, like a canonical EP, you know? So, you know, I don't know what official like EP number, you know, how that's all calculated, but I would suspect that they might not consider this an officially released EP either, despite Warp, you know, releasing it, which is nice because the fans want it, you know, but it does feel like it might work better in a, you know, just one moment, kind of one special moment type of thing, you know? So I guess we've basically explained our overall feelings here. It seems like a slightly overlooked release, and, you know, I just hate to be, you know, right on with consensus, but I feel like, you know, the ratings are about fair, in that it is like one of the lesser releases, one of the lesser EP releases by Autechre. We've done both the Peel sessions now, though. So do you see them as like, these are must-listen releases? These are important steps in Autechre's whole trajectory, or just like kind of cool bonuses for fans?
I think they're cool bonuses, you know? Like, if you are really into Autechre, which, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, especially this episode, right, you probably are. Right. So, you know, then, you know, definitely check them out. You know, there's something interesting in both of them. You know, I mean, like you said, even 19 Headaches is interesting, like, in its failure. I don't think we get to hear Autechre fall short very often. So there is something, like, interesting in that. But I think, you know, if you're just a casual fan, someone getting into Autechre, whatever, there's many things to listen to, you know, before going to either of these records.
Yeah, I mean, just... It's interesting because you must listen to Drain and you must listen to Gelk, in my opinion. But the rest of these are not like totally essential. But while you're there, you might as well just listen to the whole thing.
That's true. I mean, because they are so short. But you're right. You know, if I was making an Autechre playlist or you know, a greatest hits compilation, I agree. I think Drain and Gelk might, you know, make the cut on both of those. So it is sort of odd to say, like, don't bother listening to these, except two of their, you know, two really great songs are on each of them.
Yeah, a large percentage of both of these is like,
yeah, closer. That's true. Like 50% or 25% of the whole thing. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we can move on to the emails. Now, the first one's from Steve, who says he'd love to hear more discussion of Autechre's influences, and writes, I think it is fair game to use interviews from any time period where they actually provide a glimpse of their influences, even when those influences were a bigger impact on an earlier bit of their work. So in the Ask Autechre Anything, they write things like, of course, we're basically B-boys, very close to punk ideologically, and they often cite listening to Mantronics and those micro edits as the inspiration for the beats. But then Autechre are the kind of group that will drop references to Todd Dockstader, and so that mix of early hip-hop electro plus the likes of Dockstader and how it all comes together in their own music is just wild. Rambling here, but maybe consider an episode about the notable influences on AE themselves. The juxtapositions are fascinating to unpack, especially when they say stuff like, see, that's the problem, in it all that freedom, and they go and buy a straitjacket of academic experimental folks. And we actually got another email along the same lines from Wendell. You want to read this one, Dan?
Let me get to the goddamn screen. Wendell writes, if you're open to some feedback, I'd like to underline how important hip hop was for their development and how huge the influence of electro and Mantronics in particular was on them. I feel this was what makes them stand out among the other artists in the Artificial Intelligence album series and on Warp in general at that time. Most of it, not all the other artists, were mainly, if not solely, grown out of the rave scene. For example, Aphex and Cornwall, and definitely LFO. There may be nods to hip-hop by those other artists, but none more so than AE. I feel this info would have been better foregrounded in the Incunabula episode, since while I'm sure Detroit Techno and Chicago House were important for them, hip-hop was more so. I think diving more into that era of hip-hop and type of music, particularly electro, would have served the podcast more. It felt like this type of music was dismissed to a degree.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think? I feel like we can talk influences a little bit now, but it might be really fun to do an entire episode, maybe after we get through the main discography, on the influences Sean and Rob shout out most. We could even get clickbaity with it, you know, like the top 10 Autechre influences. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that would be, I mean, one, fun, and two, I mean, honestly, I don't know a ton about like Mantronics. You know, I'm familiar with the name, you know, I heard him, but I don't, you know, I honestly couldn't really speak to it very, very much, you know, right now off the top of my head. So
yeah, I mean, it's not something we could do justice to, I think, in this like quick answer to this.
Exactly.
Email. So it feels like it's deserving of its own episode. But I mean, when you think about Autechre's influences, I wonder if anything comes to mind, because it's tricky for me. Because I think of Autechre as like quite a unique act, I mean, mm-hmm. to say the least. It's like there's nothing, you know, that sounds like them from before them. I mean, obviously, once they start, there are lots of copycats and people influenced by them that are great. But, you know, before that, it's just hard to imagine where they come from. And, you know, I like what, God, I forget which one said this, but it's, oh, yeah, okay, so Steve, you know, talking about like, it's like some Mantronics in there. But you mix like, you know, these kind of electroacoustic, you know, noise composers like Todd Dockstader and mm-hmm. I don't know, Bernard Parmigiani and like Pauline Oliveros and stuff. It's like you mix that in there, but it is so combined, you know? It is like, you know, I think of stuff like Kraftwerk or like Coil and stuff, and yet it's not like normal artists where you can hear the little pieces of their influences anymore. It
exactly.
is like so fully synthesized that it sounds completely original to me.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that that is what's difficult about talking about it, is because you're right, it is like so blended. It's not like obviously, you know, they like Kraftwerk and stuff, but it's not like, oh, you know, this song sounds just like, you know, whatever this Kraftwerk song yeah. or anything. And I mean, all that, you know, electroacoustic stuff like Pauline Oliveris and stuff, like I love all that and listen to a lot of it, you know, but it is the same way. I can't say like, oh, you know, they're doing
right.
that here. You
yeah.
know, it's really just like, it doesn't surprise me that they're into it, but I can't point to like, this is exactly, you know, this is copying this or something, you know, they really do like completely blend it into such a new sound, you know?
Yeah. And yeah. So it's just like the spirit of
yeah,
experimenters
exactly.
like Pauline Oliveris is all over the place, but it's hard to point to things. But yeah, it's something I think that we should totally do like a full blown episode on.
Yeah.
I do want to talk for just a second about the question that Wendell asked though about, do you think it's the hip hop ingredient that makes Autechre so unique among Warp artists? I feel like that was a very insightful point, actually.
Yeah, you know, I haven't really thought about it, but I think that's true. I mean, especially like within experimental music, you know, like, you know, when you listen to electroacoustic or something, you know, obviously like beats and things like aren't something that like really come up too much. So I think that is like part of like that unique blend and everything that we were just talking about. Like, I think hip hop is like a big portion of that, you know, that's sort of the, you know, glue between all these, you know, experimental things. I think it's what makes it like so interesting. And also, I think that's a really insightful comment.
Cause I never think of like hip hop when I'm listening to Aphex Twin or something. And
no,
it's
exactly.
true that there's more of like a rave influence in the sense of it's like, it's quite in your face. Whereas I feel Autechre is very like low key. It's like mm-hmm. that kind of, you know, the hip hop style, like just a groove,
laid back,
you know,
yeah.
It just rides, and all the like intricate sound design stuff is like kind of just nestled in there, but it's not slamming you in the face the way like a lot of Aphex Twin tracks are. And yet, you know, you've got Boards of Canada who are very hip hop influenced and sound entirely different from Autechre. So
sure.
Again, something hopefully we can return to in a much larger way. I want to read another bit from Wendell's email, actually. He writes, a little good-natured taking the piss. Why do you hate fun? Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock's It Takes Two is a wicked fun track, but it sounds like I'm definitely older than y'all, so maybe you had to be there. Speaking of dancing, I find a ton of AE danceable and have danced during the live shows I've seen, especially the one around Untilted when they were revisiting Hardware. First question, why do we hate fun?
I don't know. I was born that way. I've always hated fun. I can't answer that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't mean to shit on that track specifically. I do hate it, but I don't like knock anybody for liking it. And I do think, you know, some of those tracks from the kind of novelty electronic era are plenty fun. You know, I think we were just trying to draw a distinction. You know, this like moment in the early 90s is this like, you know, legitimization of electronic
yeah.
music, like no longer a novelty. I did want to ask you though, were people dancing at the AE live show you attended, Dan?
No. And it was, I think it was 2016. It's the Orlando show that's in the AE live set, but, no, yeah. It was just a bunch of, and I could say this cause I was one of them, nerds standing around, not doing anything at all. there was like basically no movement, at all, at least in the section I was standing in.
I know we always hear from people who are like saying that, you know, Autechre made them dance like crazy or something. And I envy them because I can't even understand what I would do with my body, while listening to Autechre, but you know, I guess neither could anybody around you at the AE live show. You want to read the next email?
Yeah, here's a getting into Autechre story from our listener, Joe. He says, I first got into Autechre at 15 or 16 when I was super into Radiohead. I was particularly obsessed with Amnesiac, and I was utterly fascinated with Polk Pool Revolving Doors, which sounded nothing like anything I had ever vaguely heard before. I wanted to find more like it and found an interview where they mentioned Autechre's LP5 album as an influence on that era of their music. I went to my local record store, and the only release by them that they had on CD was a a used copy of EP7, since the name sounded similar to LP5 and it was only $8. So I thought, why not? EP7 not only got me into Oddtecker, but warp and electronic music in general. Polk Pool suddenly sounded like stock garage band loops in comparison to the insanity on this CD.
Yeah, I thought that was such a funny story, though.
Yeah, it is.
Basically, you know, without knowing it, he was on his way to pick up what I think of as like one of the more accessible Oddtecker albums, LP5, and probably would have loved it. But instead, he accidentally like skipped a few steps and
dove into the deep end.
EP7. Yeah, it's just hard to imagine going like directly from Amnesiac to EP7. But I kind of wanted to bring this up because, like, we talked about it on the episode, but I kept thinking, like, do you think there's any chance that the Kid A Amnesiac relationship was actually inspired by LP5 and EP7, you know, like the main thing and then the, you know, weirdo offshoots that kind of coalesce into something pretty brilliant all the same?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, we talked about it on the episode. I think like Kid A is like so obviously inspired by LP5. I think there's so many moments on it that are distilled down, you know, easier listening LP5 kind of thing. And I think you or an email or something we read, you know, brought up Amnesiac, like feels like the EP7 and all. And I completely agreed. I would not be surprised if, you know, if they were biting that a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I just wonder if it was like, you know, I can't think of many instances before EP7 where like an EP is album length and basically an album just under the title EP.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if they were like, why don't we just make our next EP an album like Oddtecker did? You know, it's pure speculation, but it's possible. Okay, more from Joe. I think one of the reasons why Plus clicked with me a bit quicker than with others is because I feel like it's a lot like EP7, whereas Sign flows perfectly together from start to finish and even has a lot of song structure similar to LP5. Plus starts out as more of a chill, fun time before delving into more emotional territory and ending on one of the highest notes of their career. Sign and LP5 are like epic cinematic masterpieces, whereas Plus and EP7 are like road trips with your best friend. You have a vague destination in mind, but you stop off at some different places along the way, get lost once in a while, discover some cool new places you had no idea existed, get into some fights, run into trouble at the Canadian border, break down a few times, but in the end, learn more about your friend, yourself, and the universe than you had before. That reminds me of that like subreddit, Suspiciously Specific. You know, we also got a very similar email from Mike, who writes, my thought is that Sign is the cohesive album proper and Plus is the more EP/collective a la EP7, Move of 10, Quarsus, Quadrange, etc. We talked about the EP7 side of this on our last episode, but we didn't talk about the Plus side of it. So are you feeling like that's how you think of Plus? Is it's like the EP companion?
You know, I could see that. It's a little strange because in the past, and maybe like digital is what has changed this, but you know, in the past, like Warp themselves have like, you know, with the catalog numbers, like basically the catalog number delineates which one's an EP and which one's an LP,
right.
And Plus and Sign aren't that way. But again, maybe streaming has changed that. But I definitely could see that, you know, it makes complete sense. It makes a lot of sense, like releasing them so close together. And it really does kind of feel like an LP5, EP7, you know, kind of situation. It's two albums that sound different, but, you know, similar enough, you know, like where they're, I think, obviously from the same, you know, maybe era or, you know, setup, you know, heart era.
Yeah.
Like musical setup. Rig. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know, they're definitely like different. You know, it's not just like, oh, you know, Plus's songs that didn't make Sign or EP7 songs that didn't make LP5, you know, kind of thing.
It feels like Plus is a little more willing to just veer off into odd territory.
Which EP7 is the same way, yeah.
Right. It's like a little bit like, okay, you know, flow, cohesiveness be damned. Like, let's just make something cool, which
exactly.
is kind of what they do on these companion releases. I do think it's very curious, though, that it does seem to just be labeled an album, which makes it different from any of these previous examples that Mike mentions here. I don't know. It just changes the equation. Maybe it's just a digital thing, like you say, but I mean, they could have given it a catalog number that clarifies. I mean, it's maybe an EP.
Maybe it's the digital thing, and then also like after LSEC and NTS, like maybe Warp has just said, you know, fuck it, do what you want. You know, if you want, yeah, if you want to call it an album, it's an album. You know, maybe that's just sort of all out the window. You know, now.
Yeah. All right. You want to read the next one?
Yeah. Here's another comment from Joe's super long email, which we love getting, by the way. He writes, to my ears, LP5 had this certain type of structure, chord progression style that never really got used again on any of the releases up until Sign. AU14 reminds me a lot of Arc Carrier, the red A, a lot of Vos in, and SCHMEFD2, a lot of under BOAC. There's something I can't quite put my finger on that reminds me of Drain 2 when I hear RCATs. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like in a weird way, I understand what he's saying, but maybe just in the sense of like LP5 feels very like emotionally open to me. I mean, those melodies are just shining through, like we talked about. And Sign struck a lot of people for having that same like just open quality to it, like accessible quality to it. And so it might just be that, you know, they have a certain melodic style that is usually obscured by their, you know, twisting and all kinds of like digital fuckery. But here they're just sort of, you know, both of these albums are just sort of letting it shine through, which maybe does make them, you know, link them together in some way.
Yeah, I could see it. You know, I haven't spent enough time with Sign and everything yet. Sign and Plus, basically because of this podcast, I'm working our way through. So I don't feel like I can completely speak to it. But yeah, I mean, I can see where he's getting at.
All right. Well, lastly, I want to read a few comments from listener Trond, who's been an Autechre fan since the very beginning. He writes, 1999 was a very peculiar year. I was working in telecom at this time, and the whole Y2K scare was a very real thing, at least here in Norway, where I'm from. There was an almost tangible tension building up as we moved closer and closer to the year 2000. Would the technological foundation of our civilization break down in that transitional moment because of the way we kept time? Honestly, we did not know, and everywhere people were working around the clock to try to prevent that from happening. It was a most fitting backdrop for an album like EP7. He goes on to say that EP7 was, quote, AE in all its apocalyptic glory at the edge of the millennium, propelling us closer to the unknown by the steady, clockwork-like pulse of the beats against the ghostly sound of electronics in decay. I thought this was so interesting, because I just never would have thought about the Y2K scare influencing the way people listen to EP7 and maybe just electronic music in general. You know, when I listen to stuff like this, I always think of like this almost celebration or embrace of technological development. You know what I mean? It's like a lot of these artists like Autechre and Aphex Twin and stuff, they just seem to be like rushing to push, you know, the limits of what technology can do. But it's interesting to think that there might have been like a, you know, there's some like element of terror or dread in doing that, because at that moment in time, it felt like technology was going to like, you know, destroy the entire world or something.
Yeah, I mean, I never really thought about it either. I mean, I was, I guess, 12 when, you know, 2000, yeah, or 11, turning 12, you know, when 2000 hit. So I just remember Y2K as being like a joke, you know, like,
right, right.
I you know, I didn't really think of it as anything serious, but I mean, now I'm in IT and I actually, you know, have read more about Y2K and understand, right, it and stuff more, and know that it like actually was kind of serious and also, yeah, I never thought about the context of that with electronic music, but I think that's super interesting because you're right. You know, I've also always thought of, you know, all these groups as, you know, people on the cutting edge, you know, like taking technology, you know, to its limits for the time and stuff. But yeah, there is like sort of like a foreboding or a, you know, like, you know, technological terror kind of yeah, element, yeah, to it. You know, I think like if you, I think like technology is so ingrained in our lives and culture and everything, you know, today. And basically since I've been listening to electronic music, it's hard to think of it like, in an early, yeah, internet,
a cause for worry or something. Like,
yeah,
that.
And I mean, I guess maybe they were right, but, in an early internet kind of way, you know, I was just too young, you know, the internet was just 100% fun, you know, when I was that age.
Yeah, yeah, it just really changes things to like think of it in this way. I was also thinking like probably, you know, in a few years it'll just seem like nothing and nobody will associate it in this way, but I feel like I'm always going to think of Sign and Plus as the albums I was listening to while I was dreading the U.S. election. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
I was
just like, yeah.
Are these albums going to be ruined by this terrible, terrible moment? Because it's like, you know, what I was listening to a lot at the time. But Trond also asks, are Autechre more or less exclusively the experimental electronic musicians' musicians? Everyone I know that's into Autechre at least dabbles in music production themselves. This is a good question. We also do this. What do you think about that?
You know, it's hard to answer because I think the only real life person I know that likes Autechre is you. You know, but yeah, I mean, you know, from the internet and everything, I just feel like, if you're enjoying like the sound design and all these like things that are, you know, a part of Autechre, I feel like it would just be a surprise to me if you didn't also feel like you wanted to have some sort of hand in that, you know?
Yeah.
Even I remember when I first got into electronic music, I like, torrented Fruity Loops and, you know, made really shitty, right, like, you know, things on the computer, just because it was like, I don't know. I think there's something about like electronic music and computer music that, like, you know, you have, you know, I got that music on a computer. I have the instrument here, you know, whereas like,
that's true.
When I hear the Beatles, I got to go spend $150.
Form a band.
Yeah.
Put up flyers and recruit a bass player.
Exactly. And I got to go to the store and spend money and buy a guitar, buy a bass, buy drums.
That's true.
I got to meet other people, you know, and yeah, electronic music, like that was the first thing I could sit in my bedroom by myself on a machine that I already owned for other thing, you know, school and stuff, and you know, have some sort of like attempt at copying. So it is kind of weird that something so like complicated as Autechre would be inspiring, you know. But I was gonna say
it's like it's counterintuitive because there are artists that I think are inspiring because they make you feel like I could do that, you know? Mm-hmm. But then there are also artists who are inspiring because you're like, I could never do that. And Autechre strikes me as the latter.
Yeah, agreed.
And yet there's something about like the spirit of invention that I think is really inspiring in a similar way, because they, you know, it's, you don't feel like, oh, these are like masters of electronic music, though they are. You feel more like, wow, these are people that like are making things that never, you know, we're never supposed to sound like this, and they're making music out of it. You know, like they are turning this like shitty bass synthesizer that like I could get a Guitar Center right now and making an entire track out of it or something. It's just like their kind of creative spirit, I think, is inspiring, even if the actual sound design that they do is so unattainable, you know, for any of us. You know what I mean?
No, exactly. And I mean, you know, like you talked about, you know, we've made music, and how many times, you know, when we were trying to make something, did we think like, oh, you know, let's try to do something like this Autechre song, but we'll be so bad at it because we could never that it'll you know, just form something else. You know, that's 100%. I mean, even music I make by myself, I do the same thing, you know, music we make together. You're right though, you know, like there's so many, you know, bands, you know, one of the biggest things about punk was like, you could, you know, go in your garage and you could make a band like this. And, it's weird that I don't at all think I could make an Autechre song,
but it's inspiring because it's like, you plug something in the wrong way and it makes like a really fucked up sound, and your instinct is to say like, oh, I fucked up. But if you think like Autechre, you're like, what if I use that to make a track?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And that is just like so inspiring and exciting. But that's all the emails we got for today, I think.
All right. Well, if you've got some Autechre opinions, hot takes you want to share, anything, let us know. GonkCastPod@gmail.com. Next episode, a little over a week, Confield and Gantz Graf. So send us your thoughts on those. GonkCastPod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Tell a friend. Look us up on YouTube. Stay connected. Twitter, Instagram. All that is @GonkCastPod. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.